Last time on Focus on the Family Radio Theater's presentation of Oliver Twist.
Shake my hand, Charlie, so that I know we're friends.
Oh, well, no.
Murder! Help! Down with it!
I'll give you murder, you turncoat!
You murdered Nancy! I'll see you hanged for it!
Nancy! You can't be here!
I've been true to you, Bill.
You're dead!
He lost his balance and tumbled over the parapet.
It's him! The man from the market town! The man who looked in the window with Fagin.
Yes, yes, Oliver. Do not be distressed. You are safe. Most know him as Mr. Monks, when he is, in fact, Edward Leaford, your brother.
My brother?
Oh.
Agnes Fleming was my mother.
Yes, my boy, she was. Poor girl.
Hurry, please. There's no need to push, good man.
Mr. Bumble.
What? Do my eyes deceive me, or is that little Oliver? Oh, Oliver, if you knowed how I've been grieving for you.
Oh, hold your tongue, fool.
Can't I be supposed to feel as I brought him up porocally when I see him a-setting here among ladies and gentlemen of the very affablest description? I always loved that boy as if he'd been my own grandfather.
Come, sir, suppress your feelings.
I will do my endeavour, sir.
To business, sir. Do either of you know that person?
No.
You don't? Mr. Bumble?
I never saw him in all my life.
Nor sold him anything, perhaps? A certain gold locket and ring?
Certainly not.
No.
Why are we brought here to answer to such nonsense as this?
For this reason. I can ask Mr. Grimwig to bring in two rather old women of your acquaintance, both of whom have already testified that the night a woman named Old Sally died, you were left alone with her.
Oh. What of it?
Well, you closed the door to shut them out. But you couldn't shut out the sound nor stop up the cracks in the wood.
Oh.
For they have declared that you had taken a paper from her hand and watched you next day rush to the pawnbroker's shop for a locket and gold ring. Would you like to see the pawnbroker himself, who is prepared to swear that he knows you and your business there? Oh, Mr. Grimwig, bring in...
No, if that man has been coward enough to confess, as I see he has, and you have sounded out these old hags, I've nothing more to say. Huh. I did sell them, and they're where you'll never get them. What then?
Nothing, except that it remains for us to take care that neither of you is employed in a situation of trust ever again. You may leave the room.
Thank you, sir. I hope this unfortunate little circumstance will not deprive me of my parochial office.
Indeed it will. You may make up your mind to that and think yourself well off besides.
What? But it was all Mrs. Bumble.
Coward!
You were present on the occasion of the destruction of the trinkets and indeed are the more guilty of the two in the eye of the law. For the law supposes that your wife acts under your direction.
If that's the eye of the law is a bachelor. And the worst I wish the law is that his eye may be opened by experience. Oh, by experience. Good night, sir.
You are an imbecile.
Thank you.
Is there any more, Mr. Brownlow?
I believe we have covered the most pertinent aspects, Your Worship.
Mr. Monks, you may consider yourself fortunate that the charges of fraud and robbery have not been brought against you. Inasmuch as you have sworn by these affidavits to make full restitution to Oliver Twist, we will consider the matter concluded from a legal standpoint. If there is nothing else, I will go.
Thank you, Your Worship.
I am finished.
Is there nothing you would like to say before leaving, Edward?
Yes. Yes, there is. It was my determination to destroy you, boy. I began well. But for these interruptions, I would have finished as I began.
Get out, sir, before I take a cane to you.
I will go. I hope to never cross paths with any of you again. Cross to the other side of the street if ever you see me coming towards you.
Go, or I will not vouch for your safety.
Ha!
Get out! Oh. Oh.
That is enough for one night, I think.
All right, people, let's get to class. Okay, thank you. Hey, Charlie, what's that book you've got there?
This? It's my Bible.
I don't think you're allowed to have that here.
Actually, Mr. Kiley, he can. It's totally legal.
Bring your Bible to school day, Thursday, October 6th. Learn more at bringyourbible.org. Plus, register for a chance to win a free trip for four to see the Newsboys in concert and meet the band in person. Bringyourbible.org. Bring it, share it, live it.
Build family memories together with Focus on the Family in the beautiful Bahamas for our 40th anniversary cruise. We've chartered an award-winning cruise ship in November 2017 for a four-night voyage with something magical for every member of your family. This one-of-a-kind family trip includes a live Adventures in Odyssey 30th birthday party. Whoa! Interaction with Jim Daly, Ray Vanderlaan, and Del Tackett. Whoa! Inspiring worship and much more. Book your stateroom at focuscruise.com.
Doc, what is this?
My latest invention. It allows me to see into the future.
In 2 days, I'll be Mrs. Penelope Bassett.
Wow. There's more.
I'm going to be the next school president.
I'm running, too.
Really?
What does that mean?
It can only mean one thing. Adventures in Odyssey, album 61, Without a Hitch, is now on digital download and in the Odyssey Adventure Club, coming soon to CD. For more information, visit richend.org.
How is everyone this morning? Well, I hope.
Yes, thank you.
I was troubled and did not sleep.
Why not?
It was something you told us in the sad story of Agnes Fleming. Well, there was a younger child, Agnes's little sister. Well, no one had said what had become of her.
The child. When her father, Captain Fleming, died in a strange place, without a letter, book, or scrap of paper that yielded the faintest clue by which his friends or relatives could be traced, the child was taken by some wretched cottagers who reared it as their own.
Oh, wretched?
I could not find the place to which these people had settled, but where friendship fails, hatred will often force a way. Mr. Monk's mother found the place after a year of cunning search. She also found the child.
What did the evil woman do? Take it?
No, Dr. Losburn. The people were poor and began to lose interest in their charity, so she gave them a small present of money, which would not last long, and promised more, which she never meant to send. Worse, she told them of the girl's story with such alterations as suited her and bade them take good heed of the child, for she came of bad blood and was illegitimate and sure to go wrong at one time or other. Oh. The people believed it. And there the child dragged on an existence miserable enough even to satisfy Monks and his mother. That is, until...
Until what?
Until a very lonely widow lady residing then at Chester saw the girl by chance, pitied her, and took her home.
You?
Yes, Rose. You are the child. The lost sister of Agnes Fleming.
Oh, Mrs. Maley. I hardly know what to say.
Oh, say nothing, my dearest child.
My heart will burst. I cannot bear all this.
Do you understand, Oliver? Rose is your aunt.
Oh, my aunt. My aunt. Rose. Dear Rose.
Let the tears which fell and the broken words which were exchanged in the long, close embrace between the orphans be sacred. Joy and grief were mingled in the cup. But there were no bitter tears, for even grief itself arose so softened and clothed in such sweet and tender recollections that it became a solemn pleasure, and lost all character of pain.
My dear.
Aunt, come in, please. I was only this moment writing a letter.
To whom?
To Harry. Oh. To tell him of all that has happened.
Rose, you do not need to write. Harry has been involved in all that has happened.
Has he? But...
You have not seen him, for he thought it best to perform his services secretly. He has worked closely with Mr. Brownlow. He was there on horseback to witness the death of the evil murderer of Nancy.
He was there? Then I
must... You must do nothing but prepare to greet him.
What?
Harry, come in.
Oh.
Hello, Rose.
Harry, you've come. Why have you come?
I will leave you alone.
Rose, I have come to remind you of a promise.
A promise?
You gave me leave at any time within a year to renew the subject of our last discourse.
I did.
I was to lay whatever station or fortune I might possess at your feet. And if you still adhered to your former determination, I pledged myself by no word or act to seek to change it.
Harry, the same reasons which influenced me then still influence me now. If I ever owed a strict and rigid duty to your mother... whose goodness saved me from a life of suffering, when should I ever feel it, as I should now?
But the disclosure
of... No, the disclosure leaves me in the same position as that in which I stood before.
You harden your heart against me, Rose. Think what you have learned.
And what have I learned? That a sense of his deep disgrace so worked upon my own father that he shunned all... There, we've said enough, Harry, we've said enough.
Not yet. When I left you last... I resolved that if my world could not be yours, I would make yours mine. That no pride of birth should make others turn up their noses at you, for I would turn from them. I have rejected those who would shrink from me because of you. I've turned from those of influence and rank who once smiled upon me, but would look coldly now. I would forfeit all their smiles for the smiling fields and waving trees in England's richest county. And by one village church, mine, Rose, my own, there stands a rustic dwelling which you can make me prouder of than all the hopes I have renounced. This is my rank and station now, and here I lay it down before you. I want none of it. I want only you. Now, Rose, will you have me?
Mark my words, young Oliver. It is a trying thing waiting to eat when lovers are involved.
Do you think Rose will accept Harry's proposal?
Oh, I'm sure of it.
Mr. Grimwig, Oliver, I have hard news.
Not about Rose and Harry?
No. Mrs. Maley tells me that they are indeed betrothed. This is news about Fagin.
Oh, speak, sir.
A jury has found him guilty. He will hang on Monday.
Oh.
Well, it's better than he deserves for his crimes.
Yet this business is unfinished. I must see him before he hangs.
Must you?
A few last pieces to fill in.
May I also see him, sir?
See him? You're out of your head, my lad.
I should like to see him one last time.
I believe I understand, Oliver. We shall go together.
What's your business?
I have an order of admission to the prison of Fagin.
Oh. Follow me. Interested in the hanging, are you?
We have business.
Oh, dear. Do you hear that? The men are putting up the scaffold.
Yes.
Well, here he is. He don't do much except sit there on his bed, rocking from side to side and muttering. Yeah. Just listen. Fagin! Visitors!
Oliver! Look at you. Quite a gentleman now, yeah? Take that boy! Take that boy away to bed!
What?
Don't be alarmed.
Take him away to bed! Take him away, do you hear me? Some of you take him. He's somehow the cause of all this. Well, it's worth the money to bring him up to it. Bolter's throat. Bill, Bolter's throat! Never mind the girl! Bolter's throat, as deep as you can cut. Saw his head off!
Jeff, take him! What? Get your wits about you.
What do they want?
Speak, sir. Tell him what you want, quick, if you please, for he grows worse as the time gets on.
You have some papers which were placed in your hands by a man called Monks.
That's a lie. It's a lie altogether. I haven't a one, not a one.
For the love of God, do not say that now, not upon the very verge of death. Tell me where they are. You know that Sykes is dead. Monks has confessed there's no hope of any further gain. Where are those papers?
Oliver. Here. Let me whisper to you.
No.
I am not afraid, sir.
Yeah, that's it. You see, come close, brother. Oliver, the papers. They're in a canvas bag. In a hole a little way up the chimney in the top front room. Yeah. I want to talk to you, my dear. I want to talk to you.
Let me say a prayer. Say only one upon your knees with me. And we will talk till morning.
Outside. Outside. Say that I've gone to sleep. They'll believe you, you see. You can get me out, Oliver, if you take me so. Now.
God forgive you.
That's right. That'll help us on. This door first. If I shake and tremble as we pass the gallows, don't you mind? Don't you mind? But hurry up now. Now.
Else to ask him, sir?
No other question. If I hoped we could recall him to a sense of his position.
Nothing will do that, sir. You'd better leave him.
Press on, Oliver. They'll never know, never know, until I was gone.
Goodbye, Fagin.
No.
Don't leave. Oliver, don't. They'll hang me, Oliver, my dear. They're going to hang me. For sure. No.
I'm sorry.
No.
It was some time before Mr. Brownlow and Oliver left the prison. Oliver nearly swooned after this frightful scene, and was so weak that for an hour or more he had not the strength to walk. A great multitude was already assembled for the coming event. The windows were filled with people, smoking and playing cards to beguile the time. The crowd was pushing, quarreling, joking. Everything told of life and vibrancy. But one dark cluster of objects in the center of all, the black stage, the crossbeam, the rope, and all the hideous apparatus of death.
From Focus on the Family Radio Theater, Ben-Hur.
Let him work out his hatred of Rome, chained to the oar of one of her warships.
Experience Ben-Hur today.
I am Judah Ben-Hur.
Available for download on iTunes and at radiotheater.org.
Those are the last of the documents to be signed. At last.
The lawyers, solicitors and the clergy have certainly been busy on your behalf.
Mine? Not all mine, Mr. Grimwick.
Have you not taken into your family all who participated in the reclamation of young Oliver Twist?
I do not know what you mean.
Rose Fleming and Harry Maley.
Rose Maley, you should say.
Well, Did you not use your own resources to help them find a home, along with Mrs. Maley?
Well, that was an easy task.
Oh, I see. Was it so easy to untangle the wreck of property remaining in the custody of monks, or rather, the notorious Mr. Leaford?
It was not so easy, but essential, to see that it was equally divided between that scoundrel and Oliver. It was worth it for Oliver to receive the amount.
Yeah, £3,000 is a respectable amount. Who am I forgetting? Ah, the doctor. We're dining with him this evening.
We are.
Mm.
Come in.
Mr. Brownlow, I have Oliver here, as you requested.
Oh, thank you, Mrs. Bedwin.
Oliver?
Thank you, Mrs. Bedwin.
Oliver, my boy.
Yes, sir?
I have some books I would like you to take to the shop. Will you do it?
Happily, sir.
And near there is the office of my solicitor. Will you deliver this envelope to him?
Yes, sir.
Good. Then it will be official.
Official?
You are truly, officially, and in all ways, my son.
Sir! Thank you, sir. Thank you.
I am in debt to you, son, for you have given a new purpose and a new life to my old heart.
As for me?
No, Oliver, say nothing. Go, deliver the books and the envelope. Oh, and here is a £5 note. Find something for yourself to read.
Thank you, sir. I'll be back within the hour.
The last time you sent him on an errand regarding books, I assured you he would not return.
But he did, eventually. And I've noted that you still have not eaten your head.
Brownlow, considering what happened, are you certain the boy should go to the bookshop alone?
I cannot guard him every moment of his life. Mm. I must believe that he is in God's hands, Mr. Grimwick.
Mm, and Mrs. Bedwin's.
What?
I just saw her follow him past the window.
Ah, God and Mrs. Bedwin. A capable pair.
Those characters with whom Oliver Twist interacted but were not part of Mr. Brownlow's new and extended family also went on with their lives and are worthy of brief mentions here. Mr. Noah Claypole, receiving a free pardon from the Crown in consequence of being a lead witness against Fagin, and considering his profession not altogether as safe a one as he could wish, was for some little time at a loss for the means of a livelihood and not burdened with too much work. After some consideration, he went into business with Charlotte as an informer against those who would imbibe in alcohol on Sundays, which, as any respectable person knows, is against the king's law. Mr. and Mrs. Bumble, deprived of their situations, were gradually reduced to great indigence and misery, and finally became paupers in that very same workhouse in which they had once lorded it over others. Charlie Bates, appalled by Sykes's crime, fell into a train of reflection whether an honest life was not, after all, the best. Arriving at the conclusion that it certainly was, he turned his back upon the scenes of the past and resolved to amend it in some new sphere of action. He struggled hard and suffered much for some time, but succeeded in the end, and, from being a farmer's drudge and a carrier's lad, he is now the merriest young grazier in all Northamptonshire. And now I falter as we approach the conclusion of these adventures. I would linger yet with a few of those among whom I have so long moved, and share their happiness by endeavouring to depict it. I would show Rose Maley in all the bloom and grace of early womanhood. I would paint her and her dead sister's child happy in their love for one another, and passing whole hours together in picturing the friends whom they had enjoyed. A thousand looks and smiles and turns of thought and speech, I would recall them, every one. How Mr. Brownlow went on from day to day, filling the mind of his adopted child with stores of knowledge and becoming attached to him more and more. How the two orphans, tried by adversity, remembered their lessons in mercy to others and mutual love, and gave fervent thanks to him who had protected and preserved them. Within the altar of the old village church, there stands a white marble tablet which bears as yet but one word, Agnes. There is no coffin in that tomb, and may it be many years before another name is placed above it. But if we will allow a sentimental notion, I would like to think that the spirit of Agnes Fleming sometimes hovers over that solemn place, because it is hallowed by the love beyond the grave of those whom she knew in life. For though she was weak and erring, she became the instrument by which God accomplished great good in the lives of those who needed it. Great good indeed.
A poignant ending to a remarkable story. Here we saw hopelessness and hope, abandonment and rescue, malevolence and virtue, evil and redemption. So many of the themes Charles Dickens would explore again and again in stories like David Copperfield, Bleak House, Great Expectations, and, of course, A Christmas Carol. Someone once said that Charles Dickens opened windows into men's souls. Oliver Twist may give us his clearest view of all. Oliver Twist by Charles Dickens was dramatized and directed by Paul McCusker. Sound design and mix was by Nathan Jones, with assistance from Christopher Deal and Jonathan Crowe. Our music score was composed by John Campbell. Our cast included Joseph Holgate as Oliver Twist, Henry Goodman as Fagin, Lee Boardman as Bill Sykes, Honeysuckle Weeks as Nancy, Roy Hudd as Mr. Bumble, Jeffrey Palmer as Mr. Brownlow, Jenny Agutter as Mrs. Maley, Finty Williams as Rose Maley, Harry Lloyd as Monks, and James Fox as our storyteller, Charles Dickens. Also starring were John Baddeley, Robert Benfield, Ruby Bentall, Nick Burnell, Bernard Cribbins, Elizabeth Council, Wendy Craig, Hugo Docking, Mark Field, Jane Gambier, John Glover, Peter Goodright, Christina Greatrix, Stephen Greif, Roger Hammond, Michael Hockey, Mark Heap, Chris Larkin, Harry Lottie, Archie Lindhurst, Polly March, Robert Meadwell, Joan Moon, Cicely O'Neill, David Oakley, Eileen Page, Kathy Sarah, Philip Sherlock, David Simeon, Harry Smith, Mervyn Stutter, Richard Sims, Paul Webster, and Andrew Williams. And I'm Dave Arnold, your producer and host for Focus on the Family Radio Theater. Thanks for listening.